wipes against a serious case of dry mouth, Frankie rasped. Ass elbow?
Please don't make me call it that.
He sighed on the other end of the line. Frankie swung her legs over the side of the bed, her bright kick this day where the sun don't shine socks contrasting with the dark floorboards. She frowned at the clock, which showed that it was long after acceptable hours for non-social calls from the socially awkward.
That's what it's called, because to get to it, you have to drive to the ass elbow of nowhere. It's on maps and everything.
Frankie took a long gulp from the water glass she always kept on her nightstand.
Okay, fine. I need you to come out to ass elbow and help me, he said, grinding out the words ass elbow.
Frankie held the phone away from her face so he couldn't hear her snickering.
We've got a boater down near the dam. Search and rescue has been out here for an hour or so, and it's not looking good. When the body is recovered, I want him processed quickly and moved to your facility as soon as possible.
Is it anybody local?
Frankie asked, slipping into a pair of jeans and grabbing the knee-high rubber boots she kept on hand for this sort of backwoods expedition. If she was going to walk around the shoreline near ass elbow, she didn't want to offer up her legs to the local deer ticks as a sacrifice.
I expect you to respond quickly whether you know this person or not,
he snapped at her. Frankie held the phone away from her face this time so she could pray for the patients to not hit him with a sock full of nickels the next time she saw him.
Just get here now,
he said, abruptly hanging up on her.
Lord, I know I've run through a lot of favors with you over the years, miracle-wise,
she muttered, glancing up at her ceiling as she shrugged on her Orange County coroner windbreaker.
No, I will not pray for chiggers to gnaw on a man's junk until it falls off. That is beneath my dignity as a lady. Also, I'm pretty sure that's how you end up in the special ironic punishment section of hell.
Frankie sat in the front seat of Duffy's most agile bass boat, the one he only took out for his highest-paying charter clients, as he carefully maneuvered them upriver toward the Sackett Dam in the dark. Frankie had her full field kit stowed near her feet. She knew this wasn't going to be a pleasant task. It wasn't uncommon for boaters to get too close to the dam where the water spilled over and joined the river. Inexperienced people underestimated the drift involved, even when their anchors were in place, and got sucked toward the churning froth. All it took was a few seconds' carelessness. Just a little too much water pressure on the bow, and over the boat went, pushed under by the force of the spillway. Even though she'd been through this a few times, the debris field from an overturned boat was always staggering. Soda cans, papers, ropes, chunks of foam coolers. Every little thing on the boat, except what was in the boater's pockets, scattered across the water as far as the eye could see. But so far, she couldn't see anything personal from the boaters. No clothes or anything with a name on it.
Careful, Duff,
Frankie said quietly, as they navigated through the litter. All they needed was one of those ropes caught in their prop, and then there would be two capsized boats on the water.
I'm watching, Duffy assured her.
She just wished she knew how bad the situation was so she could prepare herself. The sheriff had mentioned one boater missing. But did that mean there was only one fatality? How old was the missing boater? Was he a child? Was Frankie going to be handling the battered remains of someone she knew? She could handle it. But it was always 10 times harder than taking care of someone she cared about who'd passed peacefully in their sleep. She assumed it wasn't a local, considering Sheriff Jackass's reaction over the phone. She wasn't exactly a sensitive babe in the woods when it came to this sort of situation, but she would have appreciated a little time to prepare. She spotted the wreckage of the boat on the darkened shoreline, close to where Eric Linden and a few rescue workers were standing. Backlit by searchlights, the upturned hull was poking out of the water like a broken tooth. Even though it was rare for one of their boats to end up below the dam, a small part of her was relieved it wasn't one of MacReady's rentals. Duffy always took that hard, when someone was hurt out on the water using their equipment, like he was responsible for not giving them clearer instructions on not doing themselves serious injury. Frankie spotted rescue workers from the Sackett Preserve National Park Service's office, the closest federal resource with more than one boat, along both shorelines. They were nice guys in general, and always willing to earn some overtime doing a little good. Linden, on the other hand, was about to get a well-deserved attitude adjustment. Bless his heart. Duffy deftly guided the boat to shore, sliding gently against the mud just as Frankie leaped from the bow and landed on sure feet. Duffy handed her the field kit a few moments later.
You know I hate it when you do that.
Which is why I do it, she retorted.
He smirked. I'm gonna go look around, join the search grid.
I'm sure they'll appreciate it, she told him. If you hear the air horns, come back quick. I'm gonna need your help with transport.
Duffy nodded sharply. Frankie turned and waved at several familiar faces among the rescue workers. Lyndon was holding a flashlight over a map, while one of the more senior staff explained the layout of the lower dam. Frankie pulled her windbreaker tight around her middle as she walked closer. She was a professional, damn it. She didn't care how attractive Eric Lyndon looked, standing there in his green utility pants and emergency vest. He was a prick, prone to prickish things, and she would treat him as such.
Mr. Redmond, Frankie said, smiling at the National Park's senior officer. Thanks for coming out.
Of course, Frankie. How's your Aunt Tootie doing?
Oh, she's still a character straight out of science fiction, she said.
Mr. Redmond, a tall, lanky man with salt-and-pepper hair and a bristly gray mustache, grinned at her.
I always thought of her as more of a Reader's Digest gal myself.
You be sure to call her a gal to her face. It will make her day, she said, smiling sweetly. Would you mind if I just borrowed Sheriff Lyndon right quick? Thank you.
Sure thing.
Mr. Redmond excused himself, and all the sticky sweet charm melted right off her face.
Do you always talk to rescue workers that way?
Eric asked. Her eyes narrowed. She spoke in a low, cold tone that could be mistaken for civil if someone didn't know her well.
Yes, I do. Because I've known some of them for going on 10 years, and around here you do your colleagues the courtesy of treating them like human beings with lives and personalities of their own, instead of little machines put on this earth to do your bidding. And by the way, I asked about whether the victim was local earlier, because notifying the next of kin might be easier if I could go to them directly as a friend, and let them know what was happening, as opposed to them hearing the news from someone they barely know and probably won't like very much.
Eric's dark blonde brows knit themselves together.
You're going to lecture me on how to treat people. The midnight Uber escape artist?
She rolled her eyes.
I do not discriminate between locals and tourists. They all get top priority treatment from me. But if you want a shot at a decent second impression with me, remove your head from your hindquarters and try to refrain from doubting my credentials or professionalism for a third time. I have tried to give you the benefit of the doubt since you're new to the area and the job, but that benefit is now expired.
Eric swallowed heavily and nodded.
I will keep that in mind, he said.
Now, who are we looking for?
She asked, returning to that sweeter tone she'd used with Mr. Redmond. Clearing his throat, Eric showed her his clipboard, where he was taking copious notes in a neat block script. He pulled out an iPhone with a heavy-duty waterproof case. He pressed a few keys, and a middle-aged man with a shock of white hair and a broad, ruddy face grinned out from the screen.
Lynn Huffman, age 59, of Sandusky, Ohio. The boat went down at Ass Elbow around 6 o'clock. The call for help didn't come in until a little after 7. We didn't get boats in the water until almost 8.
Have you notified his next of kin that he's missing? She asked.
Yeah. His wife Melody is here on the scene. I wanted to get her out of here before the media shows up, but she's insisting on sticking around.
He gestured up the hill to a thin woman with blonde hair slicked against her skull, standing at the edge of the water, a green sheriff's department windbreaker wrapped around her. The resentment in Eric's voice confused her, like he didn't understand why a woman would want to be close by as rescue divers searched for her husband. But the guy had issues, and she hadn't had enough sleep to explore them. She did, however, have just enough mental energy to connect some dots about the wife's appearance.
Wait, she was in the boat with him?
He nodded.
They'd been fishing all day. Hadn't caught anything. The wife says she asked her husband to go back to their cabin a few times, but he kept pushing for more time. She said he'd heard all these stories about thick schools of fish near the dam, kept getting closer, and over they went. But she didn't get a call into 911 until almost an hour later.
Frankie glanced around. They were in an incredibly remote spot. At that late hour, the Huffmans were likely the only boaters around for miles. The dam didn't have watchtowers for wayward fishermen,
especially at the odd corner end.
How exactly was she supposed to call? Frankie asked.
Her cell is probably on the bottom. Not to mention what cell reception there is out here sucks. It's kind of a miracle that she got to the nearest phone that quickly.
I'm just saying the fact that she took so long to call in makes the timeline real vague.
Frankie stared at him.
Why would the timeline need to be clear in an accidental drowning?
He's got a lot of expensive equipment, he said. Seems to me an experienced fisherman would know better than to fish so late in the day and to get so close to the dam.
The bewildered irritation was replaced temporarily by the urge to pat his head like a puppy.
Oh, bless your heart, Sheriff. I forgot this is your first tourist season. Just because somebody has a lot of expensive fishing equipment doesn't necessarily mean they have experience or common sense. In fact, you'll find that the shinier and more glittery the bass boat, the more unreliable the fisherman's judgment.
Eric's brows rose.
What?
You ever heard the expression, all hat, no cattle? She asked. Same concept applies to boat purchases.
I'll keep that in mind.
He snorted as the hum of an engine cut across the water.
Who's that?
Frankie turned to see Aunt Donna's boat roaring through the debris field. Frankie should have known that her aunt would want to help the search and rescue dive team find some of the harder-to-navigate places where the current could have pushed Mr. Huffman. Frankie's parents had arrived with her, bringing coffee, cold drinks, and sandwiches for the rescue workers. Slowly but surely, more boats arrived, the better boaters in the community coming out to volunteer. This was one of the things she loved about her family. Yes, they could be frustrating and drive the Pope to cuss, but when he really needed them, they rose to the occasion.
That's my aunt and my parents. They're here to help.
Eric's eyebrow arched.
Nobody called for them.
Frankie grinned at him.
Nobody had to.
While her mama fed and watered the troops, Frankie hiked up the hill to Mrs. Huffman with coffee and a turkey sandwich in hand. Even from 10 feet away, Frankie could see the lady was shivering in her wet clothes and borrowed jacket. Talking to the bereaved was one of the few areas of the job that made her uncomfortable. She rarely had to talk to them at the funeral home. EJJ usually arranged the details of the services and passed them along to her. He was so much better at it than Frankie, who was always afraid of saying something that would make the situation worse. Death was a verbal minefield. Still better her than Eric, who seemed to have been born without empathy.
Hi, Frankie said, handing her the coffee. My name's Frankie McCready. You look like you need to warm up.
She didn't introduce herself as the county coroner, as Melody sipped her coffee. Frankie found that the word coroner scared surviving kin still in the scene of tragedies. They wanted to hold on to hope, and she didn't want to be the one to take it from them.
Hi,
the woman said in a wobbly rasp. Melody was considerably younger than her husband, and, well, she was at least a 9, with delicate features and almost cat-like green eyes, whereas Len was a Lake Sackett 4. She was wearing a damp blue camp shirt, khaki shorts, and sensible deck shoes, all caked with mud and dried leaves. Her pupils were huge, and she kept staring off into the distance as if she could spot her husband waving from the opposite riverbank.
Do we need to get you any medical attention?
Frankie asked, eyeing nail beds and lips that were turning purple-blue, even in the lingering warmth of early autumn. She took one of the prepackaged mosquito-repellent citronella bands she kept in her pockets and slipped it around Melody's wrist. The woman was so unfocused that she barely noticed Frankie's maneuver. Melody shook her head.
No, I told the sheriff I'm fine. The boat tipped and I just flopped into the water. I was wearing a life jacket, so I popped right up. Lynn, he doesn't like them. Says they pull at his neck too much when he's moving.
Frankie noted that Melody was still using the present tense to describe her husband, which was pretty common at this stage in the trauma process. She said,
sometimes when you've got a lot of adrenaline going through your system, you can be injured and not even realize it. Are you sure you didn't hit any debris or hurt yourself while you were climbing onto the bank? Any problems breathing or moving around?
Melody bit her lip.
No. Is there anyone you'd like us to call? People keep asking that,
Melody said,
her accent almost exotic in its nasal northern quality.
They keep asking who they can contact for me. But there's no one to call. I don't have any family, and Len's sons... Well, his kids weren't very happy about him marrying someone who's their age. They haven't spoken to him in years. They say I broke up their parents' marriage. That it wasn't right that Len took their mom out of his will and off his life insurance and added me. They always seem to forget the part where their parents were divorced for 2 years before we even met. I could call his friends from work, but his phone is in his pocket.
Frankie squeezed her arm gently. Are you sure you wouldn't like to just go back to your rental and get some rest? Melody shook her head so hard Frankie was afraid her teeth would rattle out of her head.
No, I couldn't possibly sleep not knowing. I can't just leave him out here alone.
I understand, Frankie told her. Duffy, sandwich in hand, climbed effortlessly up the hill on his long legs like he was strolling down a sidewalk.
Duffy, this is Melody Huffman.
Duffy nodded, handing the sandwich to Frankie with a post-it note attached that said, Eat this, Frances Ann. Frankie quickly stuck the sandwich in her jacket pocket.
Ma'am? I'm Frankie's cousin, Duffy McCready. I wish we were meeting under better circumstances.
I don't suppose there's much chance that he's out there somewhere clinging to a rock or something, huh?
Melody asked softly. Her red-rimmed eyes glazed over with another round of tears.
It doesn't seem likely at this point, Frankie said carefully. He was so excited about this trip,
Melody said, pressing her bottom lip between her teeth.
He'd been looking forward to it all year. That's why he didn't want to go back. He loved fishing so much, and this was a new challenge for him.
Was the boat new? Frankie asked, just to give Melody something else to think about.
No, he's had it for a few years, but this was the first time he's gotten it out this season. He's had so many projects at work, he just hasn't had the time. That's why he wanted to stay out late. I know I'm repeating myself, I'm sorry.
Did he have the engine looked at before y'all came down here?
Duffy asked. Melody shook her head again.
No. He had it serviced last spring before the season and then put it in a really good storage place. The kind with climate controls and insulation and all that. He said that was good enough.
Duffy frowned and nodded.
So when you drifted closer to the dam, did he have trouble getting the engine to start?
Melody nodded.
He pulled up anchor because we were just about ready to go, but the engine wouldn't turn over.
Melody swallowed thickly, scrubbing her dirty hand over her mouth. Her eyes welled over, and the tears left tracks through the dirt dried on her cheeks.
The closer we drifted to the dam, the faster it pulled us in. We couldn't get away. The boat went over, and I got thrown in the water, and I didn't see him again. I looked all over for him. I tried, but I got so tired. I told him to wear a life jacket, but he didn't like the way it pulled around his neck. I tried to tell him.
Okay, Frankie said, stroking Melody's arm. She saw her mother at the base of the hill and led Melody down to where Leslie stood.
This is my mama, Leslie McCready. She just loves to fuss over people. Why don't you make her feel better by sitting down and having something to eat? You've been on your feet all night. You look like you're ready to fall over.
Melody nodded and let Leslie guide her away to a camp chair near the lights.
Come on, Shug. Let's get some food in your system.
What was with the boat questions? Frankie asked Duffy. Duffy pulled a grimace, frown lines appearing around his blue eyes.
Boat engines are a lot like car engines. You have to change the oil. Tune them up, keep them conditioned for use. If you take a boat out on the water after it's been in storage for months without an overhaul, what do you think your car would do if you left it parked in your garage all winter without touching it, and then tried to take it on the highway?
Frankie grimaced.
Not good things?
Duffy nodded.
Not good things.
Chapter 5. It was Aunt Donna who found poor Len Huffman, of course. She found his body in some hidden eddy downstream from the dam around 2 that morning. Melody had stayed until she was literally dozing off mid-sentence. Frankie finally convinced her to let Duffy take her back to their rental cabin and promised that someone would come to talk to her as soon as they knew anything. All the other boats fell quiet as Aunt Donna ferried the body across the river. Well, Aunt Donna was uncharacteristically silent as she piloted the boat to shore. Len Huffman's mortal shell was draped carefully with a clean white sheet. Donna didn't have any funereal experience, but she took such things seriously. Frankie went over the mental checklist of information she needed to note about his condition. Lividity, rigor, body temp, skin tone. She tried not to focus on the mundane details, like his wedding band or the tattoo on his forearm of the name Melody, surrounded by little music notes. His body was in pretty good shape, considering what he'd been through. There were no wounds or obvious bone breaks. It looked like a fairly straightforward case of drowning, though she would have to run some tests at the morgue. Sheriff? She looked around for Eric and couldn't find hide nor hair of him. She could swear that he'd been right behind her when Aunt Donna called over the radio to say that she'd found him. Frankie pulled the sheet back over Len's face and tucked it gently around his head. Aunt Donna, I'll be ready to transport him in just a few minutes. She hopped off the boat and onto shore. Sheriff Linden? Frankie marched through the base camp, watching the rescue workers and volunteers take down the lights and equipment. It was oddly deflating, that loss of hope, even though they'd known for hours that Len was probably dead. Somehow, Eric had managed to disappear from a very well-lit area full of people who were professional finders. It took her multiple walks around the base camp before she finally found him up the hill on his cell phone, filling out paperwork on his clipboard. It sounded like he was notifying the dam personnel that they'd found the body. While it was an important step, it wasn't exactly something that needed to be done the minute they found Len. Eric ended the call, his face pale and almost cheesy-looking in the artificial light. She frowned at him and said, I'm going to contact his dentist to ask for records. If possible, I'd like to spare his wife the chore of identifying him. He nodded.
Good thinking, good thinking. Keep him in our custody for a few extra days. I'm going to contact his doctor and ask for a list of his medications.
Why would you do that? Frankie asked.
In case something comes up on the toxicology report, we need a baseline. Are you going to run a blood alcohol?
Frankie shrugged.
I always do, but honestly, I don't think alcohol or foul play are going to be an issue here. There are no beer cans or bottles in the debris field. I didn't smell booze on his wife's breath.
Let's just see what we find, okay? He said. Why don't you take the, body back to the morgue? Get some rest and run the test results back to me as soon as you can.
All right, then. I'll call you as soon as I know anything, she said. Are you going to talk to the wife?
Eric's mouth bent into a pained grimace.
I'll take care of it.
She turned on her heel and walked off.
Might as well let someone who feels actual human emotions talk to the grieving widow, you tool.
When life kept you at a morgue past 10 in the morning for non-fun reasons, the only thing that could make it better was one of Ike Grandy's artery-clogging mega-breakfasts. Frankie sat at her usual booth in the back of the Rise and Shine, wearing a pair of oversized sunglasses while she picked at a good start. A buttermilk biscuit the size of a hubcap stuffed with bacon, cheese, and sausage omelet, served with a side of home fries. Because, home fries. While several of her neighbors nodded at her from their own booths, most left her alone. Word of Len's drowning had already spread. And most Lake Sackett residents knew Frankie well enough to know that late nights out involving body retrieval did not give her a sunny disposition. She had a few hours before she was supposed to be back at work, beginning tests on Len's body. But she knew there was no way she'd be able to sleep in this state, her nerves too keyed up and her belly too empty. Poor Melody had been beside herself with grief when Frankie informed her of Len's passing, collapsing against Frankie and sobbing into a stranger's windbreaker. Even with all evidence to the contrary, she'd still held on to the hope that this was all a misunderstanding, that Len was coming home to her. The only bright spot in Frankie's mourning had been sitting on the rickety rental's couch with Melody as she called Len's sons. Frankie had held Melody's hand, ready to end the call the second that Lynn Jr. or Marty spoke the least bit crosswise with their estranged stepmother. But she'd been pleasantly surprised by their support, asking Melody if she needed anything, if they should come to Georgia, if she wanted them to start funeral plans in Ohio. Frankie sincerely hoped that it was the devastation clear in Melody's voice that prompted this change in the Huffman boys, that they weren't planning on yanking the estate out from under her while she was grieving. Frankie had spent her life around sincere grief. She knew it when she saw it, and she hoped that Lynn's sons could look past their mountain of childhood issues to see it too. Frankie didn't understand why Sheriff Linden seemed to think her behavior was suspicious. Eric Linden. Frankie stretched her aching back against the cracked red vinyl of the diner booth. She wondered if having a sheriff who seemed to be an antisocial curmudgeon with no apparent people skills was better than having no sheriff at all. Or even Landry Mitchell as sheriff, which had given her nightmares for about a week when Bill Rainey had announced his retirement. How was she going to work with someone who didn't even seem to have any understanding of the town or its people? Or any people, really. Eric Linden didn't get small towns. He didn't get that things were less formal here, or that his rigid refusal to relax came off as snobbish. She was more than annoyed with him. She was disappointed. Somehow, she'd held out a secret hope that he would let go of his initial hostile awkwardness and start to show some sign of the man she'd met before. And it hurt her more than she thought possible. Why did she want to see those flashes of kindness in him so badly? A large, burn-scarred hand appeared in her peripheral vision and poured a second cup of coffee into her red and white mug.
Morning, Frankie.
She didn't have to look up to know the hand belonged to Ike Grandy. The tall, mustachioed owner of the Rise and Shine was the only one brave enough to approach her before her third cup of coffee on most mornings. He'd been serving her breakfast for almost 30 years and was smart enough to gauge when her uncaffeinated threats were empty and when they were dangerously sincere.
Morning, Ike.
Something wrong with your eggs?
Frankie slid her sunglasses on top of her head and squinted up at him.
Nah, just got a lot on my mind.
Ike nodded glumly and put a hand on her shoulder.
I heard you had some trouble out at the dam last night. Tourist from Ohio?
Yeah.
She nodded, sipping the hot black brew. She would never tell Ike so, but she much preferred his coffee to her mama's, which Duffy could use to strip a boat engine on a good day.
Aunt Donna found him this morning.
Dead bodies don't usually put you off your breakfast. Something else going on?
Ike was staring at her face, analyzing.
I'm just fine, Ike, she promised. Peachy flippin' keen. I promise. It was just a long night.
I hear the new sheriff is, a character.
Ike eyed her in a new way now, watching her face because he enjoyed her hyperbolic reactions to frustration. It was the basis of their friendship. Frankie pinched her lips shut. Ike's thick brown mustache twitched.
No comment?
She smiled sweetly and tilted her head at a coquettish angle.
Mama always said that if you can't say anything nice, it's best to just smile until the murderous urges go away.
Ike's blue eyes narrowed.
That doesn't sound like your mama.
Well, she doesn't say it all, Finn Ike. That's how you end up with witnesses.
Ike snorted and tousled her blue hair.
Take care of yourself, Frankie.
Always do.
Frankie shoved a chunk of omelet into her mouth. She refused to let thoughts of Sheriff Linden ruin her breakfast, especially when she had a long day ahead of her. The way Ike cooked, that was disrespect bordering on sacrilege. She paused to let the flavors of perfectly cooked egg, fluffy biscuit, smoked sausage, and sugar-cured bacon meld in her mouth. Ike was an artist, and his medium of choice was breakfast meat. An obnoxious laugh broke through her reverie. She opened her eyes to see Jared Lewis sitting in a booth near the front window with a couple of his equally obnoxious friends. Jared had his mom's thick, pale corn silk hair and small brown eyes. His tanned skin bore acne scars across his cheeks and chin. He was thin and short for his age, eye level with Frankie when she wasn't in heels. It was Duffy's theory that Jared suffered from Banty Rooster Syndrome, meaning he tried to make up for his lack of height by being the biggest, loudest presence in the room. Frankie thought there might be some merit to Duffy's notion, but she also thought that Jared was an overindulged little creep with entitlement issues. Jared was mocking the waitress, sliding plates of eggs and waffles onto the table, telling her,
"Come on, come on, Thunder Thighs. We've got plans today. We don't have time to wait around on you."
The waitress, Peggy Taylor, was a pretty junior at Lake Sackett High, with her mama's heart-shaped face and hourglass figure. Her doe eyes narrowed at Jared, and she asked,
"What did you just call me?"
"I said, come on, pretty eyes."
Jared smiled winsomely, or what amounted to winsome when he had a mouthful of orthodontia.
"What, you can't take a compliment?"
So not only was this kid obnoxious, but he was also an idiot. Adulting life lesson number one: do not mess with people who handle your food. Peggy made a disdainful face at him, and Jared held up his plate of toast.
"Could you stick this in the toaster for just a few more seconds, pretty eyes? It's a little light for my taste. I like it real dark, almost burned. Can you handle that? Or should I ask Ike for help?"
Frankie could practically hear Peggy's growl from across the room. The poor girl worked on weekends to help her mama support her three younger siblings. Mr. Taylor had run off with Ike's previous waitress, Pammy Entwistle, 2 years ago. Peggy had accepted her early transition into grown-up responsibilities gracefully. The same could not be said of Jared. Frankie tried to keep the Game of Thrones, "I'ma kill you slowly with dragons," expression off her face. But as soon as he made eye contact with Frankie, Jared smirked that insufferable metal-bracketed smirk of his. He took a bottle of hot sauce from the condiment cart on the table, opened it, and shook it over his eggs. Hot sauce. Every splatter against the plate seemed to echo in her head, and Jared's grin grew wider and wider. Hot sauce. Exactly like the hot sauce that had been poured into the ketchup bottles at the snack shack. He was mocking her, openly, with hot sauce. Screw it. She was about to go full House Bolton on this kid. He took a big bite of eggs, still staring at her, and smiled around the food. Gross. Frankie clutched her fork in an overhanded psycho grip and took a deep breath. Jared, unwisely, chose this moment to slide out of his booth and saunter over to her. Behind him, Frankie could see Peggy practically torching Jared's toast against a gas burner. Watching her set Jared's breakfast on fire was enough to get Frankie to relax her death grip on her utensil. She smiled pleasantly, as if butter's temperature would not drop a single degree in her mouth.
"Good morning, Jared. How's your daddy?"
Jared snickered.
"Still your boss, the last time I checked."
"Ah, bless your heart," she cooed,
in the same sugary voice she used to talk to Tootie's bulldog, Myrtle.
"That's an interesting way of looking at what is basically a volunteer position on my part to help out my community. But if you want to see it that way, sweetie, I won't burst your little bubble."
Jared flushed red. He did not like being called sweetie. His mama called him that in front of his friends, and it embarrassed the hell out of him. Frankie smirked this time. Adulting life lesson number two: know thine enemy. Or maybe that was the Bible. Or the Real Housewives of New Jersey.
"So, how's the season treating y'all over at MacReady's?"
Jared asked, in a tone far too casual to be genuine.
"I hear you've been having problems."
"What?"
She gave an exaggerated laugh.
"Where would you hear a silly thing like that?"
He sneered.
"Oh, I just heard you'd been having issues with keeping the tourists happy."
Behind him, Frankie could see Peggy holding up Jared's strategically burned toast with a pair of tongs and running it through the gap between the hot griddle and the countertop, where even Ike's meticulous cleaning skills couldn't quite reach. Peggy was buttering his toast with years' worth of old grease, grime, and who knew what else. Frankie approved, heartily.
"Oh, not at all. I mean, I know you're probably not familiar with this because you've never actually worked for anything before, but there are little tiny insignificant complications involved with any business. And when those minor, petty, barely noticeable problems come up, you just fix them.
forget about them, and move on.
While placing the finished piece of toast on a plate, Peggy spotted Frankie watching her and froze like a deer caught in headlights. Frankie grinned at her, and Peggy relaxed ever so slightly. Smiling, she picked up the second piece of toast and gave it the same treatment as the first.
I don't have to work,
Jared retorted.
Congratulations,
Frankie said, ending the word on a dubious, scornful note.
You think you're such a big deal with your stupid hair and your weird clothes? Everybody feels so sorry for poor little Frankie who almost died. Boo-hoo.
Well, I know what you really are. You're a freak.
Jared leaned and loomed over her, because she was seated, and that was the only way he could loom over anyone.
And one of these days, your mouth is going to get you in trouble.
Frankie couldn't lie. His words stung. Not about her being a freak, of course. She dressed the way she did because it was fun, and it set tight asses like Marnette Lewis on scandalized pearl-clutching rants. But the suggestion that people in Lake Sackett pitied her set her teeth on edge. It was one thing for her to play her parents, but Frankie had never flaunted her illness around town for sympathy. Then again, the suggestion came from a half-grown jackass, so she was going to give it all the consideration it was due, which wasn't much.
Next time you make a vague threat like that, you should really twist a pretend mustache at the corner of your mouth to drive home how super-duper evil you are, she scoffed.
As Jared's face flushed an unpleasant shade of puce, she nodded to Peggy, who was walking back to his booth full of toadies.
Now, I think that sweet girl serving your food has finished your toast. Why don't you go sit down and eat your breakfast?
Jared's lip curled, but he turned and started to swagger away.
And Jared?
He stopped, and she added,
do be sure to tell your mama I said hello.
He bared his braces at her, and she made an exaggerated show of shivering in her booth. He snarled and stomped back to his table, snapping at Peggy to get the hell out of his way. Satisfied, Frankie stood and slid the cost of her breakfast, plus a generous tip for Ike, and an extra 20 across the counter.
Make sure Peggy gets this as a tip. She's worth every penny.
Ike swiped his hands on his apron and accepted the bills with a frown.
But Peggy didn't serve you.
Frankie grinned at him.
Sure she did.
Chapter 6 Len Huffman's condition was almost a textbook description of accidental drowning. Lake water in the lungs, complete with the appropriate levels of local diatoms, no alcohol in his system, no suspicious bruising or wounds, no defensive marks on the hands, no contusions on the head, no foreign matter besides dirt under the fingernails. His heart was as clogged as you would expect from any husky man in his 50s, but not diseased. She was still waiting for the drug test results from the state police, but Frankie was willing to sign all papers necessary for Melody Huffman to become a very comfortable widow. And yet, Eric Linden wouldn't release the body to the family, claiming an incomplete investigation. Melody was becoming frantic, unable to get the body home for a funeral. The only good news was that her stepsons were equally irritated by Eric's reluctance and threatening to come down to Georgia if the body wasn't released in the next 3 days. And so Frankie sat in the Sackett County Sheriff's Department lobby, which was really just two uncomfortable plastic chairs situated in front of the clerk's desk, contemplating what exactly she would be charged with if she threatened to smack a law enforcement official with one of her drainage pans. Probably a lot. Besides the gloomy wear and tear of a county building during a budget shortage, the sheriff's office was also showing some of the chaotic disorganization left over from the previous administration. Poor Janie Jesper's desk was overflowing with stacks of files and post-it notes scrawled with phone numbers and report references. The floor was crowded with filing boxes marked with descriptions like reports 1963 to 1974, water damaged. A crumpled truck bumper, labeled with an evidence tag, leaned against the far wall. Eric had inherited a mess. She felt just the tiniest bit sorry for him. But then she remembered poor Melody's face when she'd arrived that morning expecting to take Len home, only to be told that Eric hadn't signed the necessary releases. Yep, back to the drainage pan plan.
He'll be right with you,
Janie promised, chewing on the breakfast stick that Leslie had sent with Frankie. Breakfast sticks were her mama's original breakfast creation, comprising bacon wrapped around a sausage stuffed with cheese, dipped in egg batter, and deep-fried.
He's been on the phone all morning trying to get a cleaning service that will work for the budget he's got. I tried to tell him to just ask the local church ladies to pitch in and help him get organized. You know, Sarah Lee would be chomping at the bit to get her hands on this place. But he said there are regulations against that sort of thing.
He's probably right on that one. He's got enough chain of evidence issues around here without worrying about Sarah Lee getting her grubby paws on his files. Landry Mitchell, thin, with ash blonde hair and perpetually pale skin, ambled into the office, with a confidence you wouldn't expect in a man who left his police radio in the break room fridge at least once a week.
"Hey, Frankie,"
he said, peering into the white paper bag in her lap.
"You got one of those breakfast sticks for me?"
"Sure thing, Landry," she said, offering the bag. "How's your mama?"
"Oh, she's fine. Thanks for asking,"
he said, grinning around a mouthful of breading and bacon.
"No idea how she just fell off the porch swing into those rose bushes, but her leg's almost 100%. She said she's got to get better soon so I don't have to keep cooking for her."
Frankie resisted the urge to grimace. Most everybody in town, except Landry, knew the reason Vonnie Mitchell fell off her porch swing was that Landry had installed the swing incorrectly and bolted it to a weak joist on the porch. The joist collapsed under Vonnie's weight, sending her flying through an equally weak railing, also repaired by Landry, and into her prize roses. But Vonnie never wanted Landry to feel bad about his shortcomings, so she blamed her own clumsiness. She probably wanted to recover before Landry could set her kitchen on fire. Landry was a sweet guy, but there was a reason he failed to see how underqualified he was for his job, and that reason was spelled V-O-N-N-I-E.
"So how's the new sheriff settling in?"
Frankie asked Landry in a conspiratorial tone.
"He's a good guy,"
Landry said with a shrug.
"Knows his stuff when it comes to laws and such. Kind of a stick in the mud, but what are you gonna do?"
"Don't you think it's gonna hurt him that he doesn't know anything about Lake Sackett?"
Frankie asked.
"I think it might help him,"
Landry said, wiping his mouth with his uniform tie.
"It's always kind of awkward for me, arresting somebody I've known since high school or who knows my family. They cuss at me at the scene for not just letting them off with a warning. And then my mama wakes me up from a dead sleep to fuss at me for arresting one of her friend's sons. And then I get nasty looks at the food carnival. And I never know whether it's safe to drink at the Dirty Deer because someone could have spit in my beer. I figure it's going to be easier on him because he doesn't know anybody. He doesn't owe anybody any loyalty. His mama's not going to wake him up out of a dead sleep to fuss at him, because I hear she lives in Florida. Maybe that's why he moved here, because he doesn't know anybody."
Frankie tilted her head and stared at Landry for a moment, as if she'd just watched a turtle play Beethoven's Fifth Symphony on a harmonica.
"Occasionally you are full of surprises, Landry."
"Bound to happen sometime."
Landry shrugged and shoved the rest of the breakfast stick in his mouth. Janie snickered, but as soon as Eric came walking out of his office, she straightened in her chair.
"Janie, is there any more coffee?"
"Miss Frankie McCready here to see you, sir,"
she said in a very formal tone. Eric's generous mouth turned downward, but Frankie wasn't sure if it was because of her presence or the fact that his deputy had gone full chipmunk cheeks on fried breakfast meat. That was a lovely way to start an appointment.
"Miss McCready, please come back to my office."
Frankie gave a little salute, winking at Janie as she passed. Janie stifled a grin.
"Landry?" "Thanks for breakfast, Frankie,"
Landry called around the food in his mouth. Eric cringed visibly. Frankie followed Eric into his cramped, windowless office. His desk was still a spot of calm amid stacks of mildewed boxes and files. She dropped her grease-spotted white paper bag on the desk.
"These are breakfast sticks from my mama. She hears you haven't made an appearance at the Rise and Shine yet, and she's worried you haven't been eating breakfast. She has this whole rhyming thing about breakfast being the most important meal of the day, but I'll spare you."
"People have noticed I haven't eaten breakfast at the diner yet?"
She shrugged.
"Small town."
Eric eyed the bag dubiously and put it on the corner of the desk, far from his blotter.
Tell your mama I said thank you. Now, how can I help you this morning?
Well, you can release Lynn Huffman's body to his wife so she can take him home and bury him.
He sighed, flopping back in his chair.
This again?
Yes, this again. Why are you treating that poor woman this way?
Because that's my job. I just got hired.
How's it gonna look if I just rubber stamp the first complicated situation that comes up? Plus, I just don't think Melody Huffman's story adds up. And she stands to gain quite a bit by his death.
Frankie threw her hands up.
Because he loved his wife and wanted to make sure she was comfortable if something happened to him? Are you really trying to make this into a murder? Because it took her too long to get to a phone after she was thrown in the water? I told you there is nothing about Lynn Huffman's condition that suggests anything but accidental drowning.
Look, you can prove that he drowned, but you can't prove that she didn't do something to help him along. At least not until the toxicology results come back.
You are not the sheriff in Jaws. This was a boating accident, she cried. Just let me release the body to Melody so she can take him home and we can all move on with our lives.
He narrowed his eyes at her.
Are you saying this because you don't want to wreck the rest of the tourist season?
Her mouth dropped open.
What?
Everybody here talks about how vital the season is to the town's economy. You're the one who just mentioned Jaws. A civil servant eager to whitewash a tragedy so the town can move on with their lives and bring the tourists in? Sound familiar?
You know, if you could ever get both the brain cells in your head to agree, you'd be downright dangerous.
She stood with all the righteous fury someone could muster when they were wearing a t-shirt featuring a cartoon cat chasing Pop-Tarts.
First of all, screw you. Second, if anything, a nice juicy spousal murder would probably bring more tourists into town, sad to say. But that doesn't matter because I don't let things like that affect the decisions I make.
She jerked his office door open.
You want results? I'll show you results.
She stomped out of his office, only to stomp right back and grab the bag of breakfast sticks.
You don't deserve these.
And then she walked out, with his breakfast in her hand. Once Frankie worked up ahead of steam, it was pretty hard to stop her. And she knew the anger was genuine when she was still pissed off after driving to McCready's from town. Usually, blasting Panic at the Disco in the funeral home van cheered her out of lesser moods. She stomped down the hall toward the funeral home office, past the paint-by-number Jesuses the family felt too guilty to throw out. With Eric's bag of breakfast sticks still clutched in her fingers, she threw open her daddy's office door and flung herself into the chair in front of his desk.
"Please, come in," he said, shaking his head at her.
Knowing this was as close as Bob would come to chastising her, Frankie hung her head.
"Sorry, Daddy."
"What if I'd been with a customer?"
"You're right, that was rude," she conceded. "Just remind me again how often the state regulators check our logs for crematory use and how difficult it is to fudge those records."
"You can't fire up the crematory to solve personal problems, sweetheart," Bob said, his lips twitching. "We've talked about this about twice a year since you were in high school."
Frankie growled.
"Fine, another respectable felony thwarted by good sense and bureaucracy."
"What's bugging you, my doodlebug?"
he asked, smiling fondly, like her fury was the most adorable thing in the world.
"The new sheriff is impossible," she hissed. "What in the hell was the county commission thinking appointing this guy? He's cold, condescending, constantly questions my authority, wouldn't know interpersonal skills if they fell onto his face and wiggled, and he uses laws as an excuse to get his own way."
"So what you're telling me is that a law enforcement official sticks to professional topics and conversation, doesn't just accept what he's told at face value, and follows the letter of the law?"
Bob said with a frown.
"How dare he? We should fire him immediately before word gets out."
Frankie pointed to her nose.
"See this? Not my amused face."
"He had a good record and a recommendation from his boss. He had a lot more experience than Landry Mitchell, and to our knowledge has never shot himself in the foot while naked."
Frankie made a harrumphing sound.
Doodlebug, I know it's annoying to have your skills questioned, particularly when you take your work so seriously.
Frankie beamed sweetly and bounced out of her chair. Yes, thank you for your total agreement. That's all I needed to hear.
But,
he added loudly, making Frankie pull a comically unpleasant face as she flopped back down.
Is it possible that you're having a teensy-tiny overreaction to the fact that Sheriff Linden is not beguiled by your charisma and unique fashion sense?
He rounded his desk and leaned against it so he could smile down at her.
And that hurts your feelings just a little bit? Because you like him?
Frankie shuddered and edged back away from her father like she was repulsed.
Okay, we never, ever talk about me being attracted to anybody because, ew.
He's a nice-looking fella, and you have a weak spot for contrariness. Maybe you can try a little harder to be more understanding.
Stop it right now, or I will tell Mama that you've been sneaking quarters out of the swear jar for the Coke machine.
Bob's jaw dropped open.
You wouldn't dare.
Keep talking about what I find attractive in a man and see what happens,
she told her father, who scowled while drinking a fresh can of Coke. He preferred the cold cans from the machine in the break room to hiking down to the snack shack for a fountain drink.
Well, could I persuade you to take a slightly gentler approach to your problem with Jared Lewis? I honestly think if you just talked calmly to his parents about your concerns, you wouldn't have to send your Uncle Stan on stakeouts of the back parking lot. Just reason with them. You're a smart young lady. You're a problem solver. I'm sure if you found a way to reach out to them, you could recruit them to your side.
Again, no, because you can't reason with ridiculous people, she said airily, standing and dropping the cold, greasy bag into his hands. But thank you. You just reminded me of something.
What's that? He called after her.
She ducked her head back into his office and smiled so brightly that he winced this time.
I'm really good at my job.
Frankie practically skipped down the hall of Jesus Eye, mentally listing all the reports she would need to collect in the next day or so. The paperwork was going to be a pain, but the look on Eric Linden's face was going to be glorious. Her gleeful route to the morgue was cut short by the sudden appearance of Mercutio, Aunt Tootie's pug potpourri mix, rounding the corner on his long, giraffe-like legs.
Yipe!
Frankie cried, tangling her own feet together to avoid stepping on Mercutio. The dog escaped unscathed, but Frankie wound up face-planting into the carpet. She rolled onto her back, one eye closed.
Ow!
Mercutio made an apologetic little
whoa
sound, crawled onto her chest, and licked her face. She sighed.
Thanks, Merc.
Frankie scratched the dog's ears, only to be crowded by half a dozen additional wet dog noses also seeking cuddles.
Wait.
Frankie bolted up, dislodging Mercutio. She looked up to find her great aunt standing over her in a purple shirt dress and lime green Crocs.
Aunt Tootie, you know you're not supposed to bring the dogs in here. Uncle EJJ is gonna have a fit.
Oh, what your uncle doesn't know won't hurt him. I only brought the well-behaved puppies in anyway.
Frankie scanned the pack for Lulu, the pit mix who saw dry carpet as a personal challenge. Lulu was not present, so that was something at least. On the other hand, a new addition to the pack, a stoic German shepherd sat beside Tootie's feet, warily scanning the hallway. Frankie didn't know whether he was properly carpet safe or not.
Who's this?
Frankie asked.
Hercules. He just came into the shelter.
He used to work at the Atlanta airport as a bomb-sniffing dog, but his handler passed away.
Aw, I'm sorry to hear that, Hercules,
Frankie told him.
Service animals are all about routine,
Tootie said.
And poor Herc is having some transition issues.
You'll get used to us, Frankie promised, reaching out to let Hercules sniff her hand. He declined and sidled behind Tootie's legs, which spoke volumes about her appeal to males lately.
What are you doing here in the first place?
Frankie asked, carefully standing up.
I didn't know any of the services today requested live organ music.
Margot has some paperwork for me to sign for this shelter thing. That girl,
I swear I wouldn't have agreed to this silly idea.
You love it, Frankie told her. You're going to be able to help lots more animals without Dougie Hazard breathing down your neck. You'll be downright respectable.
Well, whoever said I wanted to be respectable? Tootie grinned her too white to possibly be her original teeth grin. Now get on to work. You're not paid to be lollygagging around the hallway petting puppies. She patted Frankie on the shoulder and exited out the back door, her dog pack yapping around her ankles.
And just as mysteriously as she arrived, she disappeared in a flurry of dog fur and town, crazy lady, Frankie muttered. Ouch.
Chapter 7. The MacCready cousins were gathering for their traditional celebration of possum eggs and moonshine-based cocktails. Pestilence and chaos would surely follow. With Uncle Stan keeping watch on the docks and new security cameras installed on the loading bay doors, the anonymous campaign of pranks against MacCready's had dwindled to nothing. Although Uncle Stan had claimed he saw a small figure dressed all in black row an obnoxiously orange kayak close to the dock in the middle of the night. When Stan shucked his shotgun and yelled,
"This can either end with you rowing away or you getting an ash cheek full of rock. Your choice."
The figure guided the kayak back out into open water. It seemed that Jared Lewis had gotten the message. For now. The clients of MacCready's were happy and un-hot-sauced once more, meaning bigger tips and healthy traffic through the marina. Between that and Frankie's recent forensic victory, she insisted that their generation gather at the Dirty Deer for a celebration. The Dirty Deer was the night spot in Lake Sackett, as in it was the only night spot in Lake Sackett. The smoky wood-paneled bar was decorated mostly with neon beer signs and featured old, scarred oak booths. The MacCready's held their usual table in the corner near the pool tables. The waitress, Sierra, took their orders and delivered possum eggs, an appetizer involving potato skins and bacon, but no possum. And because Frankie was the designated driver, she got a glass of extremely sweet tea instead of a Georgia peach, a cocktail involving moonshine and peach schnapps.
"Kyle couldn't join us this evening?"
Marianne teased as Margot slid into the booth while shoving a possum egg into her mouth. "School board meeting," Margot said, grimacing. "I don't know what's on the agenda, but he acted like he was facing a firing squad."
"That's normal," Marianne assured her. "We've got the trunk or treat coming up. Even though it's not an official school event, Kyle ends up getting blamed when the kids all get sugared up and cause chaos. The school board always reminds him that if his staff was teaching the kids better manners, maybe the event would go smoother."
Margot scrunched up her nose. "Isn't that the parents' job? To teach the kids manners?" Marianne clutched at imaginary pearls at her throat.
"But if I try to teach my kids manners, they won't want to be my friends."
"That's why Marianne can't go to school board meetings anymore,"
Frankie told Margot.
"So I hear that Lana and her latest beau crashed and burned," Frankie told Duffy as he poured himself a beer. "Big, ugly meltdown in the parking lot of the Dirty Deer."
Duffy looked toward the ceiling. Because he couldn't make eye contact in conversations about his sneaky, adulterous ex-wife, who he occasionally slept with, to satisfy some urge for danger and exposure to designer imposter's perfume.
"You don't say."
"So she might come sniffing around, hoping for a rebound hookup."
Duffy scratched the back of his neck.
But you're not going to do that again, right? Because we've talked about what an awful, toxic person she is, and how unhealthy your on-again, off-again relationship is, and how one day she's probably gonna... Oh, Jesus, Herbert Christ, you already slept with her, didn't you?"
"No comment,"
Duffy said, as Carl approached the table with a pitcher of water, because he got antsy around drunk people and tried to get them to space out their drinks in the name of hydration.
"Hey, Carl, want to play some pool? Awesome, let's go."
Carl frowned.
"What?"
Marianne sighed.
"Duffy, we've talked about this."
"Come on."
Duffy yanked on the back of Carl's shirt, pulling him toward the pool table.
"I don't get a vote here?"
Carl asked.
"He already slept with her," Frankie said, shaking her head.
Margot wiped her mouth with a napkin.
"Yep."
Let's move on to more cheerful topics, like that incredibly lickable new law enforcement professional who just moved into town, Marianne said.
Okay, you use the word lickable.